Welcome to VOA's International Edition for Thursday, August 6th, 2015. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Today, officials confirmed a piece of debris found in the Indian Ocean is from a Malaysian Airlines plane.
It is with a very heavy heart that I must tell you that an international team of experts have conclusively confirmed that the aircraft debris found on Reunion Island is indeed from MH370.
President Obama makes the case for his Iran nuclear deal.
After 2 years of negotiations, we have achieved a detailed arrangement that permanently prohibits Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
And a country superstar's longtime marriage has come to an end. That's all coming up on International Edition. First, Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak confirmed Thursday that a Boeing 777 wing segment discovered on an island in the Indian Ocean is from the missing flight MH370, which disappeared en route from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. Mr. Razak fought back emotion as he broke the news Wednesday in Kuala Lumpur.
We now have physical evidence that, as I announced on 24th March last year, flight MH370 tragically ended in the southern Indian Ocean.
The discovery of the barnacle-encrusted wing section known as a flapperon was the first real breakthrough in the search for the plane that disappeared 17 months ago with 239 passengers and crew on board. The wing section washed up on Reunion near Madagascar a week ago and was flown to Paris for examination and identification. Mr. Razak said that though the news is not what they wanted to hear, the discovery does give victims' families a chance to grieve.
The burden and uncertainty faced by the families during this time has been unspeakable. It is my hope that this confirmation, however tragic and painful, will at least bring certainty to the families and loved ones of the 239 people on board MH370.
The Malaysian Prime Minister sought to reassure the families that his government would do everything within its power to find out why the plane went down.
I would like to assure all those affected by this tragedy that the government of Malaysia is committed to do everything within our means to find out the truth of what happened. MH370's disappearance marked us as a nation.
Searchers continue to scour a huge area of the Indian Ocean looking for the rest of the plane. The flapperon is the first piece of the aircraft found since it disappeared in March of 2014. Now for some reaction to this news from our online community, we turn to G. Abby Lee. G., what is the world saying about this?
Hi, Dave. Let's start with Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak's tweet from 3 hours ago. He's on Twitter at Najib Razak. He shared a link to his Facebook post on the announcement and added, "An international team of experts conclusively confirmed the aircraft debris found on Reunion Island is indeed from MH370. That's been retweeted about 600 times.
All right. Well, we welcome your comments on our show. You can log on to our website. That's www.voanews.com. Or you can send us a tweet. Our Twitter handle is at @VOA_IE. Coming up, President Obama continues his efforts to sell the Iran nuclear agreement to the public and to members of Congress. You're listening to VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter at Perry Cal or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA. VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, Alexis Christophorus will tell us about a new report on the world oil market, and a high-profile music marriage comes to an end. First, U.S. President Barack Obama has defended the international accord to restrain Iran's nuclear program by saying it cuts off all of Iran's pathways to a bomb. Speaking to an audience at American University in Washington Wednesday, Mr. Obama admitted the agreement is not perfect.
The deal before us doesn't bet on Iran changing. It doesn't require trust. It verifies and requires Iran to forsake a nuclear weapon.
The deal would bar Tehran from building a nuclear bomb in exchange for lifting United Nations and Western sanctions that have hobbled Iran's economy. However, opponents say that provisions to verify that Iran is complying with the accord are way too weak. The president dismissed that criticism, as well as an ad campaign that is calling for rejection of the accord.
And if the rhetoric in these ads and the accompanying commentary sounds familiar, it should. For many of the same people who argued for the war in Iraq are now making the case against the Iran nuclear deal. In many cases, offered by the same people who seem to have no compunction with being repeatedly wrong.
Mr. Obama said the debate in the U.S. Congress over the Iran pact is the most consequential facing the country since the ill-fated 2002 decision to invade Iraq. He did urge skeptical lawmakers to approve the pact or face dire consequences in the future.
If Congress kills this deal, we will lose more than just constraints on Iran's nuclear program or the sanctions we have painstakingly built. We will have lost something more precious: America's credibility as a leader of diplomacy, America's credibility as the anchor of the international system.
The U.S. Congress is set to vote in September on whether to accept or reject the deal. Mr. Obama has promised to veto a rejection, which would then force both the Senate and the House to muster a two-thirds majority to override that veto. For some perspective on the president's speech, International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with Daria Dasa-Kay. She's an analyst with the RAND Corporation's Santa Monica office. She said that the Obama administration's sales pitch has worked in the Gulf region, but faces a tougher road here at home.
Well, I think he's moving in the right direction. He obviously has sent his senior officials to the region, and that effort looks relatively successful. The Saudis and other GCC states have cautiously approved the deal, and so that's a pretty big win for the administration. But there's a lot of explaining still to do to the American public, and in fact, polling shows that the more information the public has and the more they understand the alternatives, the more likely they are to either support or at least not reject the deal.
As far as Washington and the public in general are concerned, how much of the objection to this agreement concerns its actual details, and how much seems to be election cycle politics?
By and large, most arms control analysts believe this is a very, very strong agreement. No agreement is perfect. No agreement is risk-free. But it is a very, very detailed arms control agreement, probably the most significant arms control agreement of this nature that's ever been done internationally, the strongest verification system that's ever been constructed. I think, you know, there's a lot of questions about how the deal will ultimately be implemented, whether you can trust Iran and so forth. But, you know, the deal really builds in the possibility that Iran will cheat. And so there's a lot to be said for the terms of the agreement itself. If the goal ultimately is to prevent a nuclear-armed Iran, it does it pretty effectively for the foreseeable future.
The Obama administration has said that without this agreement with Iran, the only alternative would be military action against that state. Do you accept that as a viable position or just rhetoric?
I think a lot of critics of the deal really don't like the president's framing of this as the deal or war, and it is understandable. I wouldn't say it's just rhetoric, because I do think there's a case to be made that if this deal, at this juncture, after being approved by the international community, if the U.S. backs down on this deal and rejects it, unfortunately, you're left with the worst of both worlds, an unconstrained Iran able to reconstitute its nuclear program, and an eroding of sanctions. So it does leave a very difficult situation, and the potential for conflict to be higher. That doesn't mean tomorrow there will be war if Congress rejects this deal. But obviously the president is trying to frame it in these stark terms, very much going after especially the Democrats in Congress who may be on the fence, who may be very worried about the alternative. So it's not surprising that this kind of framing is being used at this stage of the game when he's really trying to do a hard sell.
That's Daria Dasa Kay of the RAND Corporation's Santa Monica, California office, speaking with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. Turning now to China, that country's foreign minister says his nation has stopped its controversial land reclamation project in the South China Sea. Wang Yi commented at the Association of Southeastern Asian Nations Forum in Malaysia on Wednesday, where he met with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Reporters asked Wang about the project that has pitted China against some of its neighbors who also have claims on the waterway. He said China has already stopped. He told reporters they should take a plane and look for themselves. Earlier Wednesday, Kerry expressed his concerns to Wang about China's large-scale reclamation and construction on the islands, including some which appear to have military features. China has been creating artificial islands in the waters where Vietnam, Malaysia, Taiwan, and the Philippines have overlapping claims. Troops loyal to deposed Yemeni President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi, with help from a Saudi-led air campaign, have retaken much of the southern portion of Yemen from Houthi insurgents, including a provincial capital. The pro-government forces pursued Shiite Houthi fighters Wednesday after taking 10 southern villages, the Al-Anad air base, and then the Lahej provincial capital, that is, of Houthi in recent days. The Iranian-backed Houthis still control much of the north and Sana'a, the capital of the Arab world's poorest country. The recapture earlier this week of the Al-Anad military base gives government loyalists a significant boost in their efforts to defend the southern port city of Aden. The Pentagon says U.S. forces in Turkey have carried out their first strike against Islamic State fighters in Syria. U.S. military officials said the first cross-border strike from Turkey was carried out by an unmanned drone aircraft on Wednesday. That was the same day that American drones and other warplanes began arriving at an airbase in southern Turkey. Turkey and the United States are planning joint military action to clear Islamic State militants from an area of Syria near the Turkish border. This is VOA. This time of year in the United States is when families take vacations, and many of them will drive. The price of gasoline is lower this year than it was last year, and new figures have been released on U.S. crude oil inventories. VOA's business correspondent Alexis Christophorus joins us from New York with the latest on those crude numbers and their effect on oil prices.
Thanks, David. The latest report from the Energy Information Administration finds that U.S. crude inventories fell more than expected in the latest week by 4.4 million barrels. Crude imports also fell by 370,000 barrels a day. Analysts agree this report is bullish for crude, with refining up and imports down. U.S. refineries were running at 96.1% of capacity in the latest week. The last time the country's refineries ran at that level was more than 10 years ago. One reason for the boom in refining is that U.S. drivers posted a new all-time high for miles driven in May. Also, there has been a steady rise in product exports, and California's refineries are coming back online after some unscheduled repairs. The report helped to send crude prices up about 1% on the day. David?
An international watchdog group, meanwhile, has made some suggestions for Nigeria's new president on how he can stamp out corruption in his country's oil market. What are they saying he should do?
Well, the institute is called the National Resource Governance Institute, and they made public an independent analysis of the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation, and their investigation unveiled the over $32 billion in oil revenue that Nigeria lost due to the money laundering and mismanagement of crude in the NNPC. The corporation has not provided the public records of the way it has utilized the more than 10 years' worth of the revenue it's received from Nigeria's oil production, but the international watchdog group suggests that Nigeria's new president Buhari eliminate Nigeria's domestic crude allocation. They are suggesting he fix the oil for product swap agreements and rid oil sales of unnecessary middlemen. They also say he should improve the NNPC's transparency and corporate governance. Back in June, Buhari sacked the board of the NNPC, and just this week he appointed a new group managing director. Reducing losses in crude oil sales has become even more crucial recently. We saw the slump in global oil prices has crushed Nigeria's currency, and oil sales do account for about 70% of government revenues. That's a huge chunk. David?
All right. Thank you very much. That's Alexis Christophorus, our business correspondent. She joined us on the line from New York. First, it was Blake Shelton and Miranda Lambert who announced they were splitting up. Now, Reba McEntire and her husband of 26 years, Narvel Blackstock, have said that they are divorcing. I spoke with VOA's Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about the most recent high-profile breakup.
And it may be also a sign of the times that divorce is now an option. So I think they're taking advantage of it.
Oh,
that sounds terrible.
You got money, I got money. Bye.
Bye. So, yeah, so, that you know, Reba posted on her, her Facebook page, but it's on her website, and that her and her husband, says Narvel Blackstock and Reba McEntire have announced that they have been separated.
Right.
For the past few months, despite this being the end of their marriage, they continue to support each other. They have worked together for 35 years and will continue to do so. They have asked that you respect their privacy during this time. I mean, it's kind of sad. He's been her manager for 35 years.
Well, he was a steel guitar player in her band first.
He was before.
And they got married at like 1989 or something?
Yes, on a boat in Lake Tahoe. And what's kind of nice is that when they got home, they discovered that she was pregnant.
Oh, yeah. Now, her son, their son,
yes,
is a NASCAR driver.
Yes, he is. He is. And then I know that Blackstock has 3 children from a previous marriage. What's interesting is that Blackstock Management, his company, they're still going to represent Reba, of course, but they also represent Blake Shelton. And then on top of that, you also know that Gwen Stefani, who's a judge of The Voice, working
right.
with Blake Shelton.
Right. We're not doing a 6 degrees of separation.
Oh, God.
Thing.
I'm just like, what is going on? What is in the water? She just announced within hours of Reba's announcement that she's divorcing her husband.
Mm. Well, this is. We don't know the ins and outs of a relationship with with these two people. I'm always saddened to see a marriage end just because it makes me sad.
Yeah.
But sometimes people do actually, you know, there are circumstances where it's like it's better for them to be apart.
I know.
Well, if you want to send us a tweet about this, you can send one to Nikki at VOA_music. You can send one to us at VOA_IE. You can also listen for Nikki's show, Country Hits USA. That's on www.voanews.com. Well, I don't know if Reba McEntire is Catholic, but Catholics who divorce and remarry deserve better treatment from the Church, according to Pope Francis. He told priests Wednesday that couples should be treated with mercy and not as if they are excommunicated. During his general audience, the pontiff said the Church must find ways to offer a real welcome to Catholics who have found happiness in a second marriage after their first ones failed. Now, according to Church teachings, Catholics who divorce and remarry are living in sin because their first marriage is still considered valid in the eyes of the Church, and they are not allowed to receive the Eucharist. Francis's emphasis, that is, on mercy in Church leadership has raised hope among many such Catholics that he might lift the ban on receiving communion, which the faithful consider to be necessary for full participation in the Catholic community. Meanwhile, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter is recovering after undergoing surgery to remove a small mass in his liver earlier this week. A statement issued Monday by the Carter Center, the former president's nonprofit human rights organization, says Mr. Carter underwent the procedure at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. The statement says the prognosis is excellent for a full recovery. Illness forced Carter to cut short a trip to Guyana back in May. He had traveled there to observe that country's election. Mr. Carter is a former governor of Georgia who was elected the nation's 39th president in 1976. He later lost to Ronald Reagan in 1980. His travels around the world promoting peace, human rights, and global health earned him the 2002 Nobel Peace Prize. Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. We welcome your questions or comments. You can also send us a tweet. Our Twitter handle is @VOA_IE. You can log on to our website, www.voanews.com. Tracy Carter directed our show. Aydin Erkut was our engineer. For all the folks at VOA, I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Mongolia are home to many unique species of wildlife. Cooperation in protecting these precious natural resources is one of many outcomes of the good relationship between the United States and Mongolia. That cooperation increased this month with the signing of a sister parks agreement between the United States National Park Service's Yosemite National Park and the Mongolian Ministry of Environment, Green Development and Tourism, or MEGDIT. U.S. Ambassador to Mongolia Piper Campbell and Ochirhuyag, Vice Governor of Hovsgol-Aimag, or province, spoke at the July 18th signing ceremony in the foothills of Mongolia's picturesque Khoridal-Saridag Mountains. They described the creation of the sister park relationship as an opportunity for U.S.-Mongolian collaboration in natural resource management, healthy habitat creation, biodiversity, and environmental education. At the ceremony, Tom Medima, Chief of Interpretation and Education at Yosemite National Park, signed the agreement on behalf of the United States. Director Tumursuk of the Ulan Taiga Administration and Director Tavabayar of Lake Hovsgol National Park signed the agreement for Mongolia. This newest of Yosemite's agreements involves four Mongolian wilderness areas, Lake Hovsgol National Park and Ulan Taiga National Park, as well as the adjoining Tangis Shishkad and Khoridal Saridag protected areas. Yosemite also maintains sister parks relations with the governments of Chile, China, and Germany. MEGDIT's Department of Protected Areas Management was founded in 2012. Its mission includes the preservation of Mongolian national and cultural heritage through conservation of its parks and protected lands. The Mongol Ecology Center, a Mongolia-based NGO, has worked with this department since 2011 and played a key role in facilitating the relationship between U.S. and Mongolian officials. Yosemite National Park was established in 1890 and celebrates its 125th anniversary this year. The Mongolian government established Lake Hovsgol National Park in 1992. Lake Hovsgol contains 70% of Mongolia's surface freshwater, about 1% of global total freshwater. In 2014, there were approximately 80,000 visitors. During this year's summertime Nadam Festival, however, there were more than 40,000 visitors over 5 days. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Mongolia, to help preserve the biodiversity that connects all peoples and all life on Earth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.